Good morning. Thank you for being here to share the Dharma together. And welcome to our Zazenkai, whether you are here for the day or part of the day. When we walk into this temple, what is the first thing we see? We see the foyer and its altars with various Buddha figures and bodhisattvas. There are also pictures of some of our recent Dharma ancestors, including Philip Kaplow and Robert Aiken. We come up into the Zendo, and we see our main altar with the Buddha figure and the Manjushri, or sometimes Guanyin. Downstairs, there are pictures on the walls and pillars of Bodhidharma and others. What do you suppose would happen if we took them all down? It might be an interesting experiment. Take down all the pictures of the various Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Remove all the figures from the altars. Maybe even remove the altars themselves. What would be the reaction? Would people ask, "Hey, what happened to all the stuff?" Would there be objections? Would people still come to sit? The Quakers would. Here's what Wikipedia has to say about the Society of Friends. Quakers do not believe that meeting for worship should occur in any special place. They believe that where two or three meet together in my name, I am there among them. That's from Matthew. Therefore, meeting for worship may take place in any place. Early Quakers often met for worship outdoors or in local public buildings. That's the end of the quote from Wikipedia. If you look at a Quaker meeting house, there's no altar, no crucifix, no front or back to the room, no focal point. In such a place, there is only one place to look. And where is that? As far as I know, the Buddha's Sangha was the same. They certainly didn't have any Buddha figures anywhere. They simply met and sat together. It is true that in a lot of modern Buddhist sects, all the practitioners face the front. We don't do that here. We face away from the center. Although for some things we do focus in a particular direction, as in ceremonies, and right now as I'm blathering on here. But mostly we face the wall, or in our case, the carpet. That is to say, we face ourselves. We face the bare emptiness of the mind. We learn to look at ourselves. And the question is, what do we see? What do we see from the mat? What do we see in our lives? Today we'll look at case number 25 in True Dharma I, the 300 koans of Master Dogen. The case reads, Zen Master Guishan of Ditsang Monastery held a memorial service for his teacher, Xuanzha. He invited Bao En Xuanzi and served him the evening meal. When Bao En looked at the altar, there was no picture of Xuanzha. So he asked, "Do you have a portrait of your master?" Di Zhang folded his hands and said, "Look." Bao En said, "There is no picture." Di Zhang said, "It's clear that you don't see it, but it's here." Di Zhang, whose dates are 867 to 928, is a Dharma heir of Xuanzha, for whom he is giving a funeral, and therefore a Dharma grandson of Shui Feng, and a kind of nephew of Yun Men. We don't know anything about Bao En, so I'm assuming he was a fellow teacher or a colleague of some sort. Zen Master Guishan of Ditong Monastery held a memorial service for his teacher, Xuanzha. Ditong held a memorial service. For 7 years after the passing of Philip Kapla Roshi, we held a memorial service on or near the anniversary of his death. We have also been doing this for Robert Aitken Roshi. At some centers, a Parinirvana ceremony commemorating the Buddha's passing is held every year in February. We used to do that here, but no longer, and I wonder about that. We celebrate the Buddha's birth at Vesak, his enlightenment at Roatsu. I wonder if we're missing something here. We hold memorial services here for members who have died or for an immediate family member. In almost all our memorial services, and in most places, it is traditional that there is somewhere a portrait of the deceased, usually on or near the altar. Walk through a cemetery, and on many grave markers you will see a photograph. It is said that a picture or a photograph helps us focus our intention on the person. When Bao En looked at the altar, there was no picture of Master Xuanzha. So he asked, "Do you have a portrait of your master?" "No portrait." Ditong did not put up a picture of his late teacher. Should he have? Is Bao En upset? What kind of a picture is he looking for? Ditong doesn't say yes. He doesn't say no. He just says, "Look. Look." Look at what? Look for a portrait? We have a Buddha on the altar, and we look at it and see it, don't we? Or do we? Do we truly see that Buddha, or do we see something else? Do we see clearly what is there, or do we see our own preconceptions and imaginings of what something should be or should look like? We see that seated figure up there and we're satisfied because it matches our expectations. But that kind of seeing is inherently limiting. It puts a cage around ourselves and others. Bao En looks at the altar and sees no picture. If you walked into this zendo this morning and saw no Buddha, no Manjushri on the altar, would someone complain to the Tanto that there's no Buddha there? Did he get stolen or sold, maybe? Where is the figure of the Buddha? Someone might well ask. Don't you have a Buddha figure on the altar? Where, oh where? In case number 48 in the Wu Meng Quan, a monk asked Jian Feng, "The Bhagavats of the Ten Directions have one straight road to Nirvana. I wonder where that road is." Jian Feng lifted up his staff, drew a line in the air, and said, "Here it is." Bao En asks for a portrait of the master, and Ditong says, "Look." Where is Xuanzha's portrait? Where is the road to Nirvana? Where is the Buddha figure? Jian Feng says, "Here it is." Ditong says, "Look." What is it to look? To really look? Is it to look at something fixedly, trying somehow to penetrate it? Is it to look for something? Something that isn't there or that we don't see? Years ago, Alan Watts did a series of televised talks, and in one of them, he came right up to the camera, put his face in it, and said, "Look at this screen. Really, look at it." Now, what are you doing? Are you hunching your shoulders, leaning forward, squinting? What does that have to do with looking? Yes, if you look that way, you will never see. If you are working on Mu and trying to look at it or look for it in that way, you will never see it. It will remain a separate object outside of yourself. How much of our lives do we spend looking? Looking for all the usual suspects: wealth, security, love, and so on. Maybe we learn to give that up. But then in our practice, are we looking for something? Realization? Enlightenment? The answer to a koan? Is that looking any better? This question is brought up in case 55 of the Blue Cliff Record. The case reads in part: one day John Yun, carrying a hoe, went to the lecture hall and crossed back and forth from east to west and west to east, as if he were searching for something. Shi Shuang said, "What are you doing?" Jian Yan said, "I am looking for the relics of our late master." Shi Shuang said, "Vast waves spread far and wide. Foaming billows flood the skies. What relics of our late master do you seek?" And Shui To comments, "Alas, alas." And Jian Yan said, "It is a way of acquiring strength." I suspect that by the end of that exchange, Shi Shuang and Jian Yan were both laughing. The sun rises, the rain falls, the traffic hisses by. What more do we seek? What kind of looking is it that is a way of acquiring strength? And where are the relics that are still present? Di Tong says, "Look." He reminds Bao En and us to look, to see clearly. Don't go searching outside of yourself. Bao En is looking for some fixed object outside himself. Di Tong reminds him and us to look for the portrait of no abode. Ultimately, we must realize that there is only one place to look. Then it is no longer looking. It is seeing. It is seeing clearly. This is the gate to the focusing on our lives, our work, our family, when looking becomes clear seeing. When we see an icon, what do we do? What comes up in the mind? What about when we see a person? Do we paint a picture? Master Dogen has this to say about painting pictures: when mountains and waters are painted, blue, green, and red paints are used. Strange rocks and wondrous stones are used. The four jewels and the seven treasures are used. Rice cakes are painted in the same manner. When a person is painted, the four great elements and the five skandhas are used. When a Buddha is painted, not only a clay altar or lump of earth is used, but the 32 marks, a blade of grass, and the cultivation of wisdom for incalculable eons are used. As the Buddha has been painted on a single scroll in this way, all Buddhas are painted Buddhas, and all painted Buddhas are actual Buddhas. What do we use to paint a person or a Buddha? We use eyes, face, hair, stature, the five skandhas of form, feeling, thought, volition, and consciousness. And nowadays, newspaper reports, television, all kinds of websites, everything we are, everything that we were or will be, are all manifested in our painting. The painted Buddha is the only one that functions. The painted person is the only one we can love, have compassion for, help if we can. The painted rice cake is the only one we can eat. The painting of portraits is necessary. It is delusive wisdom. It is also called marvelous functioning. As long as we recognize our delusive wisdom as such and do not attach, it becomes genuine transcendent wisdom. We see the painting clearly and it becomes the actual Buddha. All painted Buddhas are actual Buddhas. You see, it would be all too easy to say, oh yes, if you look, Buddha Xuan Sha is everywhere. Well, I have to go beyond that. If someone asks me about my late wife, Candy, do I just say, oh, she's everywhere? That's getting stuck on empty oneness, caught in the ghost cave. No, I'll paint a picture of her with words and thoughts of love and remembrance. We pay homage to our teachers in the same way. But we also have a choice. We can paint portraits with love and compassion, or we can paint them with anger and jealousy and resentment. Which do you suppose will lead to the happiness of ourselves and others? But if we look for something, a picture of Buddha out there as opposed to in here, we will be lost. If you think of a loved one, a child or a partner, is your portrait right now lacking anything? It is whole and complete. If we come to enlightenment, the portrait is still whole and complete. Years ago, the Zen Center was host to a practice called Nikon. That's spelled N-A-I-K-A-N, not the camera. Nikon involves a complete process of recall from earliest childhood to the present in 3-year increments. One takes each parent, sibling, etc., in turn and asks the questions, how did this person help me? How did I help that person? How did I make trouble for that person? What was that all about? It is about seeing our lives and ourselves clearly, warts and all. In other words, we are painting Buddha. We are painting a portrait of no fixed abode. And the more we practice, the wider our vision. The greater the portrait of Buddha, the greater our portrait of the universe. Sometimes it's a portrait of ourselves, our family, maybe the car. Sometimes it's a portrait of a dog or cat. Our reality of this moment is nothing but a picture painted with all colors, shapes, and sizes. It's all that we have and all that there is, whole and complete. What we see is what we see. What we hear is what we hear. What we smell, taste, and touch is what we smell, taste, and touch. What we think is what we think. Your picture of me right now is the actual me. And my picture of you is the actual you. Everything is true. Everything is real, says Dogen. The painted portrait is all we have. All we can have, our Xuan Sha, our teachers, our parents, our children, the Buddha, or a rice cake. Together with all beings, we realize the way.